Hello and welcome back to Footnote from Playwrights Horizons. My name is Chelsea. I'm our digital content producer. And today we've got three incredible conversations with the masterminds behind the three rep shows coming up this fall at Playwrights. We've got Amusements, we've got Sad Boys in Harpy Land, and we've got School Pictures. So without further ado, I bring you the three folks behind those three incredible shows. Here we go.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How
Excellent.
Are you?
I'm great. Will you tell the people at home who you are and what show you're doing at Playwrights this season?
I am Milo. For years, I have been working on this show called School Pictures, which is a series of songs. Each song paints a different portrait of a young student, inspired by 5 years I spent working as a private tutor in New York.
I have to know, if you were writing a song about your time in middle school or junior high, what would the name of it be and what would it be about?
Yeah.
Or what would it sound like? What's the vibe?
Well, when I was in elementary school, until I was in fifth grade, I was in speech therapy because I couldn't pronounce r, k, ch, th, z. I also even struggled with ta. So I remember, like, I couldn't say cookie. That was a particularly brutal word. Mm-hmm. And girl was a really hard go. And I remember, like, yeah, like being teased on the bus and like really losing my shit and like throwing my backpack because nobody understood me. So I think when I was young at that age, what I really craved is a facility with language that I didn't have. And I think that if you asked me at that time what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would say I wanted to be an actor or a poet, you know, because no one can understand me. But yeah, no, then, I mean, I was always, like, very, if I had to write a song about myself. I think another thing is, like, just, I struggle, as I think many of us do, with executive functioning, a phrase I only recently learned, but little things stress me out so much. Mm-hmm. If I have to write an email, it will take me, like, a professional email, it will take me, like, an hour to, like, psych myself up. Mm-hmm. Convince myself I should do it, write many drafts, and the email is like some short little thing that's like confirming 1 p.m. today, and then after I send it, I have to like process that I sent it and be like, oh my God, does that person hate me now? Did I say the right thing? But I was really like that as a child, and so many of the songs are just really basically about doing homework, like accomplishing very simple things that I think a lot of people find very overwhelming and that are hard to talk about. Like, oh, I left my book at school, and now I'm screaming at my mom, and like, we don't know, like, and the future is on the line, vaguely. Yeah. I think another thing about the songs is that because the people are young, we look at them with love and tenderness, and it can be really hard to look at yourself with love and tenderness. So even if sometimes the songs deal with some really dark things or can be very critical of certain things in the world, there's an enormous tenderness in them, which maybe I would have a hard time having for myself if I were trying to write a song about myself.
I do also, when I think of my childhood and my now, I'm like, well, adults then would look at child me and be like, well, your problems, you know, the world is not going to end.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying so hard to be like, my problems now, the world is not going to end.
So,
that's like a really interesting difference that you see like kids' problems and like kids' lives. You're like, oh, let me hold you. Like, it's
gonna
be fine.
Oh my gosh, right.
But then once you're an adult, it's like, good luck, kid. Everything sucks and we're all doomed. But it's really, you know, could use some of that child time innocence that we had. So you did mention that you're not the most prolific musician, which is great. So how did you land on music as the medium instead of maybe poetry or, you know, like just doing skits as opposed to full music?
Music is the best thing in the world. And I think some of my earliest memories of going to the theater, I was really excited by, it was often because it was like something I had never seen before. I remember seeing, a workshop production of Daniel Fish's Oklahoma when at Bard College when I was like 14. And it was unlike anything I'd ever seen. You know, they served chili to the audience.
Yeah.
You were in this like kind of makeshift church basement space. And it was nothing like Oklahoma as you knew it. And I remember being like, wow, like I didn't know theater could be this good. I didn't know you could take art seriously. I didn't know, or I also saw a production of Orestes, the Greek tragedy directed by Joanne Acolytis, also when I was like 15. And it was like there was water and blood and smoke and nudity. And all these things now that I recognize almost as like European stage cliches. But at the time I was like, wow. And I barely remember like the story. But so I'm very interested in kind of theater events that kind of like are really thoughtful about what the event is and kind of performance-ness and event-ness. And so one thing I like about the show, in part because I myself am performing it, I get to kind of be very, very playful in my relationship with the audience and my relationship to the act of performing. And sometimes it's almost like I'm not performing. Sometimes it's like I'm really, really performing. And that, and then also during the pandemic, it's just so sad how theater was so decimated by the pandemic. And so there's, the show has a ritual quality. It's like I am alone performing this cycle of stories, bearing my soul, to use a very corny phrase, but it's like this very, very, very introspective, scary to perform thing that I do for people. It's like there is an elegance to the, and I love plays, and scene work is so complicated and juicy, and there's like, you know, playwriting, because there's what the playwright thinks, there's what the character says, there's how the can be so complicated and achieve like dizzying levels of irony. But this show, I think also another thing about music is like it makes people's lives better in a visceral, everyday way, because it is so healing. I recently went to this show at the Whitney. Who is the artist? I forget the artist's name. It's this very cool, buzzy show that's all about class and labor. But what's funny is that it's at the Whitney, so it's like kind of like hard to access. And I was just thinking about, and even though some of the artworks were very thoughtful and beautiful, it's like a song is doing more for me on a daily basis than this incredibly sophisticated gesture.
So you're a playwright by trade, as you've just mentioned. So why was it that you wanted to play this part as opposed to writing it and handing it off to another actor?
It is extremely vulnerable and personal. And I think that I was in a place ontologically where I was like, I want to be responsible for the words coming out of my body. I don't want to put words in someone else's mouth. I have no right to speak for anyone else. And so something about centering myself was actually about just wanting to be transparent and accountable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, and then also the writing is so connected to how it's performed. Like there's parts that are screamed and parts that are whispered. And so it came from, like the show was created by doing it over and over alone in my bedroom. It was not created by sitting at a Word document and typing. So it was like oral first. And yeah, it has been the time of my life. Like working on the show got me through the pandemic. Like every day I would sing the songs again and make little changes. And it was like such a dorky joy, but it was, yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
But no, playwriting, I do I am in an MFA program for playwriting right now, and it is awesome. You know, I love the theater. I don't know.
Love theater, period, mark it.
Yeah.
End of sentence. So you've taken the show around a bit from your basement to the Wilma Theater in Philly, and now you're here. You were an intern 10 years ago, which is a great roundabout. Do you feel like the show has changed based on where you're at, or is it at this point kind of fairly set in stone?
In Philadelphia, it was so cool. Well, I had never been to Philadelphia before, really, and my wonderful friend Morgan, who's the director, works at the Wilma Theater there, which is an amazing theater, and I was so happy and honored to be there. But it was daunting because I didn't really know anyone. And when I was performing it, I was really anxious about getting COVID, because if I got COVID, the show was canceled. And so I would do the show for audiences of strangers, and then I would often not even go out to say hello after because I didn't want to get COVID. Mm-hmm. So I would just go back to my hotel room and be alone. So it was the most surreal lifestyle where, like, if a stranger was watching my day, it's suddenly I'm going into this room and singing for all these strangers and then going home and not talking to anyone. So it was very daunting. And so it's also like, I don't know what I'm communicating or to. However, we did do a show for like 300 high school students, which was at 10 a.m.
Excellent.
That was like the scariest day of my life. 300 high school students, 10 a.m. And they asked, afterwards there was a talk back with them, and they asked interesting questions. They were like, where did you get those shoes? You know, they were like, how much was the set did it cost? They were like, are you a real tutor? They were funny. They were like skeptical and amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's, and then I've also done the show, you know, for my parents. That was kind of daunting. I kind of did it for them very casually, like, because I was like, guys, I'm going to do this thing. What the fuck do you think? No, but I've done the show in really small, intimate things, and that's the best. And then in the Philadelphia, it was this 300-seat theater, mm-hmm. so that was quite different. I'm very, very excited to do it here. It's about New York. I love New York. Mm-hmm. And I love Playwrights Horizons. So I, and also, even though it's not a play, that is the tradition that I am trained in and work in and come out of. You know, when I was reading all these plays for Playwrights Horizons 10 years ago as an intern, the things you're thinking about are, what is the artist trying to do? Do they do it or not? And then you're thinking, okay, is what this artist is trying to do aligned with the values of our theater? And so you just these like kind of very open-ended questions about like, what is art for? Who is it for? What is quote unquote interesting? So I think the show, I've arrived at the show through working through all of that mm-hmm. and thinking like, well, who the fuck am I? What the fuck is worth doing?
It may not be a play in like a traditional sense, but also so many of the best works come from molding the form, you know?
Yeah.
Not to get too heady with it.
No.
All right, last bit here. Yeah. If you could time travel back to Little Milo, and give him any words of encouragement, what would you say to get him through those troubling times?
Little Milo? Honestly, I feel like Little Milo, I would like some words of wisdom and encouragement from Little Milo and not the other way around. I mean, I think Little Milo was kind of like just very, I'm at a moment in my life where I'm like, God, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? And am I going to have children? And where should I live? And what will become of me? And how does one, am I going to grow up? And how do I do it? And I think Little Milo, who like had hair past my shoulders and always wore mismatched socks and wore huge t-shirts that were like often covered in food stains and like was like, I'm a poet. Like I was like such a little freak. There's a kind of intensity and passion and confidence and embrace of the kind of chaotic that I miss, mm-hmm. and that we all have to kind of sacrifice and kill a little bit in order to just participate in email culture. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. So go back to Little Milo, take some of the inspiration, and then yeah. with it. Excellent. Great. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
This has been great. Hello. How are you?
Hi. Oh, hi. I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Good. I'm excellent. Would you introduce yourself to the people?
Yes.
Tell them what you're here for.
Yes. Hello, people. My name is Iketriku Famadu. I often go by Ike. And I am here to tell you a bit about a show that I'll be bringing to playwrights in the fall called Amusements.
Excellent. You are not new to Playwrights Horizons. You're coming back to us for a second time. You were with us for Claire Barron's Dance Nation. What's it like to be back? It's been a couple years, and what's it like to be back, but this time filling the shoes of the writer as well as a performer?
Yeah, well, let me first say that, it's funny because it's, you know that thing that happens where you think something is 2 years ago, but then you look at the dates and you're like, oh, wow. It's actually half a decade ago. So it feels a little surreal that so much time has passed, but it also feels like that production was just happened yesterday. So it's a little strange. Not to get too, I don't know, heady or away from the topic at hand, but it's caused me to deeply reflect on the nature of time and how hard it is to get a grasp on it. What's it like to be here as a writer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that also seems very strange. I think I would not have imagined, for whatever reason, that I would be back here in that capacity.
Have you often thought about writing for theater, or is this kind of a new love of yours?
This is kind of a new little experiment, I guess. I have been working... basically, when I started writing material, I was like more firmly planted in the world of theater and kind of like downtown performance. And then when I started making material, I had drifted over into the comedy world just because it was much easier to like try out new ideas and I was mostly trying to create things that were humorous, and so found myself in a more comedy scene. And I'm basically coming back to this theater, still, I guess, writing in the same way. I guess it feels like I'm working in the way that I've been working for the past few years, but now doing that work in a different context. So I'm curious as to how things will be received, how it will feel to do things that I typically perform in a basement in Brooklyn somewhere for an audience here in the heart of Times Square. Is this the heart of Times Square?
I like to consider us like the elbow.
The elbow of Times Square.
You know, we're between 9th and 10th.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're like
a bit west.
Far enough away.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
You can sweat on the way to the subway.
You can sweat on the. Yeah, that's a good marker of what's
the heart
and what's the distance from the heart.
I'd probably sweat even if I was walking like a block. But, you know, that's you know, a me problem.
They're big blocks here, you know.
You got a good point.
Yeah. They're the longest I've seen in my life. Let's say that.
You kind of touched on it. You know, you've done a lot of kind of going between comedy and theater and acting and writing. You've done late night TV, film, a whole lot of things. So what do all of these different parts of your career fulfill for you?
You know, I Yeah, I think I like looking at familiar things and somehow seeing something new in them. I feel like I do that a lot with material, of trying to take things that are familiar and like slightly changing the context or tweaking some aspect of it so it's sort of experienced as this sort of new and strange thing. And it occurs to me in this very moment that part of going between these kind of different worlds is, yeah, like while I'm working in one area and then hop over to another area, I feel like maybe you sort of look at it in a slightly different way or a slightly askew angle that maybe reveals some potential for creating something new. Going back and forth between all these different scenes, ways of working, kind of it makes each of them feel kind of new and strange. Maybe I don't like to feel like I'm too settled into one area, because then maybe I'll start to take something for granted if I get too comfortable in any sort of one particular situation.
In your life, has there been some kind of pivotal moment where you knew that you had to entertain, you had to write, you had to perform?
Yeah, that's a good question. How did we end up here in life? I don't know, because there's so many little moments. Yeah, it feels more like there's like an accumulation of many everyday decisions that kind of lead one down this particular path of living. So yeah, I don't know if there was like a big eureka or if it was more of just like
a slow burn.
And that's, yeah, I mean, there was a moment I feel like in 2012, which kind of, yeah, I think I mark as kind of like the start of writing material and performing, where, yeah, I felt like, I needed to, I hope this doesn't sound too intense, repay a debt of gratitude to my mom, who's always been pretty supportive of these pursuits. And in that year in particular, I remember feeling particularly stuck in figuring out how to navigate life in New York and trying to figure out how to do what I wanted to do. And I felt like that was a very grounding feeling, thinking of, you know, the support that I've received up to this point and wanting to, I was about to say follow through, it sounds too pedestrian, but let me honor the effort that has come, that has been made on my behalf by giving it a good go with this entertaining and writing and performing.
The old college try.
Yeah.
So for other young artists that are out there and they're looking to have as diverse of a career as the one you have had and you are currently having, what are some words of wisdom or encouragement that they may not have heard elsewhere? Maybe something your mom told you that made you want to honor that that support.
Well, one thing I think that's important that sounds like so, I don't know, it sounds dumb, but you know, doing your best at whatever you are doing and in that current moment, I think is important, because you actually, it's hard to predict how the thing you're currently doing will influence your trajectory, I guess, or how the thing that you're doing now will come into play in the future. Particularly, I guess, when you're, if one is like hopping around from different things, it can be hard to know exactly how point A will connect to point B and C and et cetera. But I think one increases the likelihood of an interesting connection being found by just doing your best with whatever's in front of you. And then, just, nothing is ever wasted, So even if something feels like a failure or just feels like a, or just feels like some one-off random thing, I think having in mind that nothing's ever wasted keeps one open to the possibilities of things connecting in wild, fun ways. So those are words I would share, and indeed have just shared.
Have just done so.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
A hesitant good to start things
hesitant
off.
Hesitant good.
That's what we like to
hesitant
see.
Hesitant good always.
If you'll tell the people at home who you are and what show you're working on for Playwrights, that would be great.
Yeah. My name is Alex Tatarski, and I am the writer and performer of Sad Boys in Harpyland here at Playwrights.
Sad Boys in Harpyland. Yep. What would be your one-line elevator pitch?
Sad Boys in Harpyland is my attempt to go deep into the woods of despair and see what we can learn there and alchemize that into something raucous and absurd and delirious.
Raucous is an incredible word. That's great. It does make me feel like I'm going to listen to like folk music, but like chaotically while I'm there, you know?
Yeah, and maybe with someone like chewing on all the instruments.
Definitely. And they might be rabid.
Right.
But in a fun way.
A musician who just got rabies, attempting to play a song and then sort of giving up halfway through and drooling everywhere.
Yeah.
That is a better pitch for the show.
Well, it also sounds like a fun Saturday night to me.
We're going to be friends.
Yeah. How long have you been working on the show?
Too long. I've been working on this show for my whole life in some sense, but it's an episodic work, actually, and we're in the third iteration of it. So about 10 years ago, when I was 24, I took on this absurdist and doomed task to adapt a very long novel that nobody reads alongside my life for the rest of my life. And so we are in the midst of that ongoing lifelong project.
Wow. 10 years ago, that's great.
Something like that.
Yeah. And so now you're at the height of it, off Broadway.
Yes, exciting to have it all be downhill.
Yeah. So you've been downtown with the show. You know, you've taken it around 10 years. You said you're in kind of the third iteration of it. What's the experience of moving it around? Do you ever feel like you need to adapt it based on maybe a new audience, a new landscape?
Yeah, it's never finished, which is part of the project, like a devotion to unfinishedness and to putting a state of coming apart and unraveling on stage and welcoming that as a mode of writing and a mode of performing. So I would say I identify as a clown more than a playwright. So this is an exciting new context for me to be in. And clowns are always responding to the audience and the room. That's sort of the material, like working with nothingness as sculptural material in conversation with an audience and in response to the context. So everywhere that I have taken this exploration, it kind of changes radically in response to what's happening in that room. And I'm really thrilled, curious, horrified, delighted to be taking it to playwrights and kind of have that framing about what it means to to play and to make a play.
Yeah, that's also very exciting because if someone's seen the show before and they loved it, they can get a ticket for it now and see the same show, but with, you know, some different feelings and some different, just kind of like a different air in the room.
Totally.
You know, that's awesome. How has this differed from your other work, which I would love to ask you about your other work later, just because you've done so much. How is this in particular, though, a different experience?
This is perhaps the most maddening and somehow all-encompassing work that I've done because it really feels like a bizarre lifelong project. So other pieces have been explorations of, for instance, compost, one of my ongoing obsessions, or sort of clown history in relation to political history, or devouring different kinds of Americana myths. But this project for me is really about digging into and questioning the fiction of the self, like how we are taught to become individuals, often in ways that causes us to harm ourselves, harm others, harm the earth. And how do we undo that together without totally losing it? So it does feel like it can drive me to a certain sort of spiral that I want to welcome into the piece, and in that way it's very different from other projects, like really trying to be brave enough to go down the spiral with an audience.
Mm-hmm. Which can be rough.
It can be rough.
Because they're right there. You can
True.
See their reactions.
It's an exercise in total humiliation. Yeah. It's been great and terrifying and rewarding all at the same time.
Amazing. So, talking about your other work, I did take a little look at your resume, and you've been all over the place. You've been to Russia and Mexico and China, and you've taught, and you've worked in poetry and performance, and you've toured and all these different things. What is a little insight into kind of how you found yourself moving into all these different avenues? Is it something you kind of set out to do at first, or, you know, the act of discovery in life? What was that like?
No, I never set out to do any of this. It's been an ongoing accident and surprise and gift and curse. I would say a lot of it was determined by the fact that I could never figure out how to get a job, and the only thing anyone would ever ask me to do end up turning into this life. So a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and almost like a philosophy or an ethics of scrappiness and scraps. So that informs everything I do. Like, how can you respond to the situation and learn from it and kind of like take the resources that you need to say the things you want to say, and also help distribute those resources when you have access to them, to your friends, to your community, to your partners in crime. So that can take you all kinds of places. It's like, I always just want to find the people that I want to be talking to about stuff, and that can take many, many different forms to just be having the kinds of conversations you want to have, and digging in with different kinds of people.
Yeah, sounds very much like a just say yes kind of a journey, a true yes
oh my
and
God,
in life.
Totally yes and.
Total clown
until
improv.
You reach a moment in life when you start to have to say some no's. But generally, yes will always make the wildest, strangest things happen. So I've been very lucky to get to do that. My dad used to say that being brave is really about being terrified, but going for it anyway. So I try to keep that in mind. Like, being so scared all the time is actually the bravest thing ever. Because you're still trying.
I'm sure he's very pleased that that's stuck in your mind. I feel like anytime someone gets to be the quoted, like, this person is my muse, they're like, wow, I like said that offhand. That's incredible that you're sticking with that.
Yeah.
That's great.
You're welcome, Daddy.
If you could meet little Alex again through the time traveling ether, mm-hmm. what kind of, you know, inspiration would you give them, and what kind of knowledge would you impart with them after, you know, living many years of doing these, you know, crazy things all over the place?
Very good and very difficult question. I think I would give little Alex kind of the same advice that I would give slightly bigger Alex, which is to do the things because you're curious and not for any kind of external validation, but to remember that making strange clown shows is the best way to figure out a certain kind of thing, to like be in the not knowing and be open to insights that you really can't predict in advance. So it's not a life that you choose in order to make a living. It's a life that you choose because that's the way that you've decided works to figure some things out. And that's gonna be a journey that continues forever, mm-hmm. but can go on. The support and the belief in it has to come from inside, because the world very often does not support those kinds of endeavors.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, I've been thinking the last few minutes, you said clown history is something that you've you've got some experience in, and I just have to know, like, what do you mean clown history? Do you have a favorite fun fact? I need to know more.
Yeah, well, I definitely think a lot about how the trickster is definitely a key part of all societies and cultures. And so it's exciting for me to identify that trace all over. But specifically in the US, I've developed an obsession with how clown has become an insult, a slur, you might say, and often used to talk about our politicians. So that's one particular strain of clown history in the context of the US that I'm super fascinated by. Like, the very first political campaigns followed the same touring routes laid out by the first American big top circuses. And so there is this real marriage, I think, in the US specifically, between different forms of entertainment and commerce, and kind of cultivating consumption mm-hmm. among viewers that can often distract from the real issues. So I've just been kind of like identifying how often politicians masquerade as clowns and use the clown legacy towards sort of devious ends of kind of keeping people's attention but not actually saying anything or doing anything meaningful. And so it's like finding where the real clown can poke through and trouble all of that and call that into question and sort of topple the king. I think in the US sometimes our kings wear the mask of the jester to kind of hide what they're doing, which is often very deliberate and quite violent and vile.
You've given me much to think about on the topic of clown history.
Once you start thinking about clowns, you just can't stop.
Oh, wow. Incredible. Amazing. Thank you so much. And I'm really looking forward to seeing your show.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.